You know, we had the state microbe over there, too. I did the state yeast.
We should just go down the list of other state options that we can
state
figure
pie?
Out.
Ready on the left.
Actually, it's Marionberry.
Ready on the right. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to convene the April 6, 2017 meeting of the Subcommittee on Natural Resources of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 5040, the Watershed Enhancement Board. And what kind of background do we have on this?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, as usual, the Legislative Fiscal Office budget brief is posted on OLIS along with the presentation and the DAS presentation on the governor's budget. You have the executive director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board here today. They're just here today with Monday planned for public testimony.
All right. Thank you very much. Come on down.
Except the price is right.
We're sure it is.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
I haven't yet. No.
Co-chairs Witt and Frederick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Maida Lofsgarden. I'm the executive director for the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. With me today, I also have Renee Davis, who is the deputy director, who will be carrying a part of this presentation, and of course, Kathy Connolly with CFO's office. So I always like to start our presentations with just a reminder that no matter where you live, you're in a watershed, and the work that we do through our granting programs covers from ridgetop to ridgetop. So we have traditional work with salmon, but we also work on things like sage grouse, oak habitat, and other areas with our granting programs. Just a little bit of historical background about our agency. In our early days, we're a fairly young agency. We were formed in 1999. Prior to that, there was some funding under the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board, about $500,000 for the biennium. In 1998, Measure 66 passed. That provided 7.5% of the state's lottery revenues to what became the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. That 7.5% was split a little bit differently early on. I'll speak more about what it is to currently. Measure 66 was set to sunset in 2015. So in 2010, a group of organizations came together to run a ballot initiative to make that funding permanent prior to sunset. Ballot Measure 76 passed in 2010. It made our funding permanent, 7.5% of lottery revenues. 65% of that funding goes for grants. 35% of that funding goes out for operations, which includes the staffing for our agency, as well as a number of other agencies who support the native fish and wildlife habitat and water quality values of Ballot Measure 76, and they help to implement the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. Many of those agencies have been before you already with some of their Measure 76 lottery requests. We also use a variety of other funds to implement our grant program, primarily federal Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery funding and then salmon license plate revenues. We receive half of those funds for grants on the ground. Our agency's mission to help protect and restore healthy watersheds and native habitats that support thriving communities and strong economies. It is a triple bottom line approach, but most importantly, because of the constitutional ballot measure, it is around native fish and wildlife habitat and water quality. Our current strategic plan, I'm just going to briefly mention, has five areas that we focus on. Our investments on the ground, working with local infrastructure, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in some of the examples we provide later, but we provide the capacity funding for soil and water conservation districts and watershed councils across the state. So that investment comes through our grant program. Strong public awareness and involvement. Again, if you live in Oregon, you live in a watershed, and we want to make sure that folks around the state know that and do their part to keep our watersheds healthy. Partnership development. Again, we'll talk in a little while about our partnership work around the state, and then efficient and accountable administration. When we get to our key performance measures, we're going to spend some time in these areas and talk to you about how we're measuring these various areas of our mission. We are working on a new strategic plan. Our last strategic plan was developed in 2010. That was at the time we didn't know if our funding would be permanent or not. And so we, our plan didn't have a really good set of guidelines for what we would look like if we were permanent. We've spent a number of years since the ballot measure passed putting new statutes in order, developing what's called our long-term investment strategy, and now our board is relooking at their strategic plan. We are going through a very open and transparent process, as is the tendency with our agency. And so we are doing interviews with stakeholders. We have an external advisory group, listening sessions. We hope to complete that plan in mid-2018. So I just mentioned the strategy that drives our investments is what we call our long-term investment strategy. Our board put this together in 2012 and 13, right after it was determined that our funding would be permanent. And I envision this, and you'll see when I show a picture of our spending plan later, it's very similar to an investment portfolio that you would have for your retirement, for example. It is the different pots that we put our funding into so that we can support a broad range of watershed investments in the state. The basic funding, the core of our funding, is that operating capacity for soil and water conservation districts and watershed councils. And then the largest program that we have in our portfolio is what we call open solicitation. And those are the grants that we invest in across the state. It's an open competitive granting process. It goes for restoration, technical assistance so that we get good designs and engineering for our projects, outreach, monitoring, and then a number of other restoration tied programs. We also have and moved from a pilot to a permanent phase in what we call focused investments. And these investments are multi-year, multi-million dollar investments in places where we think we can get ecological uplift with very strong local partners. We have six of those in the state, ranging from the Willamette Valley all the way over to the east side of the state in the Grand Ronde and sage grouse and the Harney basin with the wetlands work. And finally, what our board proposes is that across all of these areas, we really need to do a good job of monitoring the effectiveness of our investments. We will be spending a lot of time with you today talking about that approach, because that ties into our key performance measures and some changes that we are proposing to you. So we look at monitoring not just what we're doing with restoration on the ground, but also how our operating capacity works, for example. And we are just in the process of designing what effectiveness monitoring looks like for organizations. So as I mentioned before, we have two program areas. The grant program supports local community organizations as they do that work on the ground to support habitat. And then operations is what we have that supports the delivery of those programs on the ground. So we actually are a fairly easy agency when it comes to the division. And I want to actually give some thanks to Paul Siebert, who helped bring our federal program in line with this. So now our federal grants sit on the grant side of the program as well, which has made it a lot easier for us to track. And I think, as you'll see when we get later into the presentation, it makes it a lot easier for you to track as well what we're investing on the ground versus what goes into our staffing. So before I get into the staffing specifically, I just want to talk a bit about our program delivery. We are a very small agency. We make up, I think, Kathy, less than 2% of the natural resources staffing, but just around 17% of the natural resources budget. So very small agency in terms of staffing, but we have a very large investment on the ground. And we do that through this model that I'll describe, and that is our agency, we're a grant-making engine. So we solicit for the grants, we review the grants, we manage the grant program, we manage the monitoring around those programs, and we develop partnerships to leverage resources. So we bring in other dollars to do the work that we're doing. It is our local restoration partners who actually implement the projects on the ground. And there are at minimum 200 plus organizations around the state who are receiving our grants and doing projects on the ground. They are the workforce behind everything that we do. Our staffing would look a lot different if we were the agency who actually had to implement these projects on the ground. So we can operate in a fairly lean fashion and working closely with our local partners. And then landowners and communities commit to taking voluntary restoration actions and investing in the restoration economy. And so that model of voluntary restoration provides a nice complement to what you've heard from other agencies who bring the regulatory programs, who form the baseline of what we expect to happen on the ground in terms of water quality and fish and wildlife habitat. This then is the voluntary side of that program that really ensures that Oregon remains as the natural resource state with the values that we have. Our program doesn't just fund OWEB's mission, and this is just a quick highlight of kind of on the left side how we structure ourselves in terms of our constitutional ballot measure statutes, federal laws that govern us. Within that, then, our mission, our strategic plan, our investment strategy, moving down through the funded activities and implementation. But those aren't just implementing what OWEB cares about. They are really implementing things like the state's Agriculture Water Quality Management Plan, the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, and the State Conservation Strategy. So we are a vehicle to help deliver the priorities for other agencies as well at both the state and federal levels. We have a 17-member board. They oversee our spending plan. That is their primary responsibility. We will have a board member here on Monday who will talk to you some about the role that the board plays, or you can ask Representative Witt, who used to be on our board a number of years ago. That is their primary purpose. So they serve as your counterpart from the board's perspective to make sure that those funds are invested appropriately, that we are investing in high-quality projects, that we have effective review processes. Those members include five who are public at large, who are appointed by the governor. But then in an interesting twist, in addition to the five, we also have a tribal representative. But then we bring in members from other boards and commissions. So five other natural resource agencies supply us with board members from their boards who serve on ours. The goal for that and the purpose is, going back to that previous slide, to make sure that we really are investing in the things that are important to other natural resource agencies as well. We also have non-voting members, including OSU Extension and then five federal agencies on the natural resources side. They are non-voting, but they serve to make sure, again, that we are coordinated well with our federal partners. I'm not going to go through this, but I just want to show you the work that our board does on your behalf with the spending plan. So it's broken out into four large categories, the categories I talked about before, and then every biennium they go through in detail with the grant investments and identify where those investments should go. They do that in partnership with our statewide and local organizations. We deliver grants on behalf of other state agencies. Those are included in our spending plan. Our staff then does all of its granting based on the board policy priorities that are set through its spending plan. As I mentioned earlier, the biggest portion of our spending plan is around open solicitation, our competitive grant program. Our board believes strongly that because ballot measure 76 passed in every county of the state and passed with 75% support of voters in the state, that we ought to have a granting program that is reflective of all of the communities in the state. So that is remains our largest investment. The other categories are also competitive investments, but they focus on, again, specific areas like capacity and focus investments. So moving to our staffing, I think we may be one of the few agencies who can put every individual staff person on one slide for you. So this is our organizational structure as approved in the legislatively adopted budget from last biennium. There are a number of areas here. Again, we have investments both in our monitoring staff. We also have investments in reporting and our online systems. We have moved to an online granting system, and so we have computer staff who support that work. Moving over to the middle, our grant program staff, we have staff in every region of the state. We have six regions. We have staff located out in those regions and then one located here in Salem for the Willamette Valley, as well as staff who manage our small grants programs, our focus investment programs, and some of our other partner programs with other agencies. And then we have a suite of fiscal staff who are responsible for ensuring that we have effective and accountable administration of those funds. on the ground. Our 17-19 budget doesn't look very different than our 15-17. We actually have had proposed a reduction of one administrative support position who was on board to help us in our shift to going online with our granting systems, and that work was completed, so we're not asking for that position again. The positions we are asking for are limited duration. They are continuing limited duration positions. And they are federally funded, so we come before you each biennium to ask for continuation of those positions that are under federal funds. Two of those positions are related to monitoring our conservation outcomes on the ground, and two of those positions are related to some of our focused investment and partner grant programs, for a total of 33 positions for the agency. I understand the question has come up about our average costs per FTE. So I have two slides for you here. The first from 15-17 to 17-19. This shows the shift, the increase in our legislatively approved budget totals compared to our proposed totals. And then on the next slide I have, if you'd like to look at it, just specifically the salary and wages. So our salary and wages have gone up some, and in taking a look and analyzing this, what we had a few years back is about a 30% retirement in our agency. So we had a lot of staff who were at the step 10 in the system. They were replaced with staff who came in at lower levels, and those staff are now moving up through the steps. And so we do have a number of staff who have increased their steps over the last biennium, which they had been at a lower step and they've now moved up.
Question?
Senator Girard.
Excuse my ignorance, but OPE stands for, is that benefits?
Other personnel expenses. Sorry, Senator Girard.
Okay.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please explain how people move up in steps. Do they have to do anything, or they just be there for a lengthy period of time, or what?
Co-chairs, Representative Esquivel, I will get back to you on the specifics of the personnel system, but typically in the state system, there are specific time requirements that they meet to move up in steps, and I can get back to you with more detail on the specific process for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the related to our agency caseload, we currently have over 1,100 open grants. Those, because our grants are multi-year, we might be bringing 150 grants into the system, but at any given point in time, we tend to range between 1,000 and 1,200 open grants that we have going on across the state. That balance of open grants is about $58 million. That has ranged in time between 50 and 100 million, depending on what grants we have out there and the size and complexity of the projects. During any given biennium, currently we've reviewed 1,354 applications and executed grant agreements. We still have one grant cycle left to go, so this is about three quarters of what our workload is in a typical biennium with our staff. To date, again, with three of the four grant cycles, we still have one grant cycle left to go this biennium. We've received $62.8 million in requests from individuals on the ground. I want to give a little bit of an example of what that looks like across the state. So here, this is an online system that we have. You can go and look up any grant that you would like. This shows by basin in the state how many grants are in each of the basins, our investments since 1999. If you zoom in, then you can actually go into a specific region and take a look at the types of projects in that region. Just quickly on the right-hand side, the colors are the different types of grants, so acquisitions, council support, outreach, et cetera. If you want and are interested, you can move in even further and highlight a specific project on the ground, and then it will pull up details about that project, the OWEB investments, and what that investment was used for, along with our partners.
Hmm.
So we're going to shift now and spend some time talking to you about our key performance measures. When we came in front of this body at the last in the last biennium, we made a request to make a wholesale change to our key performance measures. There were many changes that had happened since our KPMs were approved 10 years ago, and to be honest, a number of them were not within control of the agency. And so what we found every biennium when we would come and report to you is that we were reporting to you on things that really didn't match the way that the agency was operating. We were reporting to you on things that were the responsibility of federal agencies or other agencies, and it didn't feel like we were giving you data that really helped you determine whether we were effective or not. So over the last biennium, we worked with our board, we worked with LFO as well, and have a proposal for you for some revisions to our KPMs, and I am going to turn it over to Renee to talk about the details.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, Renee Davis, deputy director. So as Maida mentioned, we've spent the last few years really taking a much closer look at our key performance measures with the intent of ensuring that those measures really are effective at tracking the agency's performance and progress through time. So what you'll see in just a bit, first we'll cover the current KPMs, and then we'll review for you the proposed revised KPMs that we would like for you to consider, is a combination of both internal measures that really look closely at our grant-making processes and the efficiencies of that, and then also some external measures that hopefully will better track our ability through time to put meaningful investments on the ground that really do benefit native fish and wildlife habitat and water quality, as is expected of us statutorily and in the Constitution. We will, a bit later in the presentation, talk about some of the other measurement tools that the agency's using above and beyond KPMs to track our progress, but we'll first cover key performance measures. So first, I'll start with our current slate of KPMs. You see them here on the screen. We currently have 10 key performance measures. They cover a whole host of topics. Some focus on internal measures of how we provide service, such as operations, payments, and customer service. There are another set of our current key performance measures that are much broader in nature. And so these cover topics such as fish monitoring, salmon habitat quantity, fish populations, and plant communities. And as Maida mentioned, while these are really valuable measures overall of how voluntary restoration occurs in the state, they're not necessarily appropriate tools for measuring how OWEB as an individual agency is performing. Some of these KPMs were developed actually about a decade and a half ago to really get at the progress associated with the broader Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds and the collection of agencies and partners involved in that endeavor. So the remaining KPMs on our current slate cover such topics as outside funding, watershed council work plans, and restoration. And those are really aiming at understanding how the investments that we put on the ground are playing forward in terms of positive effects. So I will now give you a brief overview of how we're doing with some of those current KPMs. So you see here the summary from the 2016 in a performance progress report. So in terms of how we're rating, half of our KPMs are in the red category. Those include operations, restoration, plant communities, work plans, and salmon habitat quantity. I'll talk just in a few moments about the kind of hows and whys of that situation. We have one KPM, fish populations, that's in the yellow category, and then our four remaining current KPMs are in the green category: outside funding, payments, fish monitoring, and customer service. So you might have a sense of some of what Maida was mentioning earlier about the challenges that for some KPMs we've been facing in terms of being able to have appropriate reporting capability to speak to not only what we are doing as an agency, but some of these expectations about speaking to what other partners, such as federal agencies, are doing. So I want to spend a little bit of time giving you a sense of those hows and whys with the current KPM. So our first KPM around operations, which is the percentage of total funding used for agency operations. We are in the red category, as I mentioned, and that is because we are still using a methodology and a target associated with how our budget was structured under Measure 66 as opposed to Measure 76. when we transitioned to Measure 76, we no longer were responsible for the distribution of those operating funds to other agencies, so that drastically changed the calculation. And so the target is something that we're not able to meet in the absence of having those funds that go to other agencies included as part of the calculation. So shortly I'll talk through the proposed revised KPMs. This is one we're proposing a methodology and target change on. Outside funding is our second KPM. We actually are in the green category for that KPM. We did, though, as we're reflecting on our KPMs, really take a look at, is the methodology that we're using the most accurate way to get at this information, given that we do rely on outside data sources in the form of our grantees for this. So we're proposing a minor methodology change to that. Restoration, which is the percentage of OWEB investments that address established basin restoration priorities. We are in the red category. We have no data for this because there have not been comprehensive and coordinated consistent restoration priorities established for all basins across the state. So again, this is something that we have struggled with reporting on through time, but do have an alternative approach to present to you. Our fourth KPM is around payments, the percent of our payments that are turned around to grantees within 24 days. We are in the green category for this. We've been meeting this mark and expect to continue to do so. Fish populations, the percent of monitored native fish populations that have stable or increasing abundance. We do rely on our partner agency, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, to report on this. We do not keep the data associated with fish abundance. That agency does. But we are in the yellow category, so doing fairly well on that. Plant communities, the percentage of improved riparian stream miles relative to the total stream miles in Oregon. We are squarely in the red category for this measure, and then also salmon habitat quantity, which I'll talk about later. This is one of those KPMs where when it was established, the intent was to speak to the progress associated with the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds more broadly, not simply OWEB's investments. We have really struggled to get access to the necessary data for this, including from some of the federal agencies, simply because of some of the changes in data management structure that they've had. We also are challenged to get information about voluntary work that occurs on the ground, but is not associated with our investments. So we are proposing a different approach on this one. KPM 7, work plans associated with watershed councils and their progress towards accomplishing their work plans every biennium. We are in the red category for 2016, but that is only because we gather data once every biennium for this. It's a biennial reporting, so we had no data in 2016. That did put us in the red category. Typically, though, we meet or exceed the target for this. We are proposing just a minor change to better align this with our administrative rules for council capacity investments. Fish monitoring, so the degree to which native fish are monitored at an adequate level. We are in the green category for this. We fully rely on ODFW, though, to report on this metric. This is squarely focused on monitoring work that agency takes the primary lead on for the state. So we are proposing actually a deletion of this, which I'll talk about shortly. Salmon habitat quantity, the percent of habitat made available to salmon each year. This falls into the same category as the riparian metric. We have really struggled through time to obtain the necessary data to be able to comprehensively speak to this KPM, so are proposing a change. And then finally, customer service. We are in the green category for 2016, and we actually last year saw quite a significant increase in our customer service numbers compared with years prior. So, moving on to the proposed revised KPMs, I'll move through these fairly quickly because we did touch on some of the issues when I just walked through the current KPMs. The restoration priorities KPM, we are proposing to more directly connect this KPM through a revision to what is outlined as OWEB's mission both in the Constitution and by statute, and specifically address the degree to which our funding addresses habitat for native species and 303D listings, water quality listings. So rather than attempt to connect this to basin priorities that have not been established consistently across the state, really pointing to those expectations of OWEB as an agency as defined in statute. the next KPM around potential salmon habitat made available. Again, we've struggled with access to data to report on this, so we are proposing a revision that would focus this specifically on the fish habitat that's opened via projects that are funded by OWEB. So really ensuring that we have a measure that that tracks through time the progress associated with our investments rather than attempting to gather information that's been incredibly challenging for us to obtain from others involved in restoration. We are proposing to add a few KPMs. This is the first proposed addition, and this would be a complement to the salmon habitat metric that I just mentioned, but with a focus on upland habitat. We currently do not have any KPMs that track this upland work in which we invest, but yet it's a really important part of the board's investment portfolio, things like sagebrush habitat that Maida mentioned, oak woodlands in the Willamette Valley. So we're proposing to add a metric to ensure we can track progress associated with those projects also. Improved riparian stream miles, again, have struggled through time with getting the necessary data. So proposing, as we did with salmon habitat, to really focus on the progress accomplishments under our investments in grants that do riparian work rather than the broader collection of riparian projects. Fish species abundance, we are not proposing to change this KPM. We do rely on ODFW for reporting this, as I mentioned, but we believe that it's a good overall tool for tracking how native fish species are doing in Oregon, so would retain that. Here's the second KPM that we're proposing to add. This would provide a sense of how our funds are distributed across the state. So we would look at the percent of Oregon's 76 sub-basins, so that's a hydrologic area that has been defined by the federal agency, U.S. Geologic Survey, that actually benefit from Oregon or from OWEB grants. So the intent here is to really understand how our dollars are spread across the state, and if we see areas that maybe chronically are missing from that list, have the opportunity to dig in. Is there something missing by way of local capacity, for example, that some funding from OWEB could help to address and resolve if necessary? Watershed Council work plans. As I mentioned, we are proposing a minor change to this KPM to better connect it to the administrative rules that guide our investment in Watershed Council capacity. So rather than looking at short-term biennial work plans, we are proposing that the new KPM would track the degree to which councils are demonstrating both effective organizational governance and management using merit criteria that are applied as part of our review process. So really transitioning from short-term progress by councils on their work plans to how are they functioning more from a long-term governance standpoint. Customer service, no action. That's a static measure for all agencies. Funding used for agency operations. We are not proposing to change the title of this KPM, but simply to align the methodology and the target with the new funding structure that exists under Measure 76, so really cleaning up something that's not yet been addressed. So the methodology would include all operating costs, both direct and indirect, as a percent of grant and other payments made by the agency, and we would adjust the target from what is now quite low at 6% to something that is more in line with what typical foundations of our size, given that we in some ways are a public foundation, see by way of operating costs. Grant payments, no change there. Our third addition, though, in terms of KPMs, is to provide a similar internal efficiency measure, but for our grant program. So this would add a measure that focuses on open solicitation grant agreements that are executed within 1 month of board award. The payment tracking does a great job of looking at how our fiscal staff are doing by way of efficiency. This would really get at how our grant program staff, which make up quite a significant part of the agency, are doing by way of efficiency and determine if we need to put some additional thought or effort into meeting that 1 month turnaround time. funding from other sources, minor revision here to simply narrow it down to looking at funding from other sources associated with our restoration projects that are funded by the agency. Our intent here is to ensure that we're using the most accurate measures to get at the contributions from other sources, and we think this would be a change to for the better to really ensure that we're using the most reliable data available at time of project completion. And then finally, the native fish monitoring measure that we currently have. As I mentioned, we are entirely reliant on ODFW to report on this measure. Also, given the different structure in terms of how funding goes to other agencies under Measure 76, we have no role in providing those Measure 76 operating funds to ODFW. So we feel as though having this KPM associated with monitoring is a better measure of that agency or their work, at least, than it is of OWEB's specific ability to make grants as part of our mission. So we're proposing deletion. One quick note on this. We have been in the green category for this measure for a number of years, so I just wanted to highlight for you, we are proposing to delete something that actually helps us in terms of that pie chart, but we really are aiming here to have measures that are as effective as possible at tracking OWEB's performance. So with that, I'll present you with the proposed revised KPMs. We are proposing to go up to 12 from 10, but feel confident this collection of internal and external measures will really help to understand how the agency is performing through time and help us to adjust accordingly.
All right. Representative Power.
So I was looking at a previous slide where you're talking about the importance of monitoring to all of your investment programs, but then the piece on monitoring is being deleted from the KPM. Can you talk to me about where that's going to be captured in these revised?
Absolutely. Representative Witt, Representative Power, thanks for the question. And that was actually something that I should have wrapped up with, is later in the presentation, we are going to be talking about a number of other tools, measurement tools that we use to track both outputs and outcomes. So we are fully committed to doing that monitoring work. As Maida mentioned, it was included in the long-term investment strategy and have a number of ways to do that. We are simply recognizing that that individual key performance measure is not necessarily the best way to measure our agency or the most effective way for us to get at those trends through time based on the results of our investments.
Mr. Siebert.
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative, I would just note that the ODFW KPM, they track a measure that's very similar on percentage of fish species of concern being monitored. So it is being measured somewhere else in the Fish and Wildlife Agency.
Thank you.
All right.
Again, for the record, Maida Lofsgaarden, Executive Director. I'm going to speak now to some of our budget drivers and environmental factors. What we've done throughout this presentation as well is, again, leading to what we'll be talking about later, we've started to highlight for you where these KPMs now come into play in our new system. So you can see from our end, we feel that these are a critical connection to a larger conversation about how we measure our mission, and we just want to start to show you how that plays together. So our fund sources, as I mentioned at the beginning, we have lottery fund. The revenue projections are reflected in our budget. We'll be looking again for the May forecast to see what those projections show. We do have a competitive grant process for our federal funds. A third of our funds come from Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds. We compete for those funds annually. We have done a very good job over the years in competing for those funds. And now, thanks in large part to Renee, we have the highest ranked project proposal of any of the states moving forward. And we have just submitted our latest proposal, which mirrors the last one. So we hope to be very successful this year as well. I will note that in the president's budget, both for 17 and 18, that fund has been zeroed out, but it also has incredibly strong congressional support. So we have submitted, and we should know by June, our receipt of funds at the federal level. There are some limitations on the use of the various funds. The federal funds, 90% of those have to be used for projects on the ground. And then again, we have the 35-65% split on the lottery funds. We have investments in new granting programs. Again, we talked about our focused investment partnerships. Those are the multi-year, multi-million dollar investments across the state to really achieve ecological outcomes at a different pace and scale than we are able to one grant at a time. And then we have partnered over this last biennium with the Oregon Department of Agriculture on what they call their strategic implementation areas. That is a work to do both regulatory and complementary voluntary work to meet the requirements of Senate Bill 1010 for agriculture water quality. We have $1 million investment in that through our spending plan to help implement projects on the ground that connect and help us move forward on the water quality measures for agriculture. And then, our granting efficiency with 1,100 open grants, we have a 9.6 administration to grant for our grant program delivery. And then we rely on other agencies to provide services for us as well. So, for example, a number of state and federal agencies serve on our regional review teams, so that we get the best technical expertise that we can. That's an efficiency for us because I don't have to hire the biologists and the foresters to review the grants. We can take advantage of those existing resources and still make sure that we have highly competitive grants. A few major changes over the last 6 years. Again, in 2011, 12, and 13, we were implementing Measure 76, which was a big change for our agency. Even though the granting continued, there were a lot of logistics in the new statutes that we had to address. We also adopted our long-term investment strategy. We made there were changes to the federal grant eligibility requirements as well. So I just mentioned that 90% of those funds have to go for projects on the ground. That used to not be the case. We used to have a lot more flexibility in how those grant funds were used. So while the Measure 76 funds became somewhat more flexible, the federal funds became eminently less flexible, and so we've had to make adjustments there. In 13-15, as Renee mentioned in our KPMs, we had revised our rules for council capacity and now have a pretty high criteria for our expectations for the governance of local watershed councils. And so we spent a lot of years, 3.5 years, with those councils working through a process to make sure that we had effective governance and that we, as the state, are investing in organizations that can effectively manage their funds. We also set out priorities for our focus investments in that biennium. In 15-17, to keep the ball rolling on our changes, we decided to reorganize the agency to better reflect how we implement our grant programs and to make sure that our staff are connected in cross-section teams, that we are operating as effectively as we can be. That was actually a staff-led reorganization, so they helped to design how our agency is now structured. We implemented our first focus investment awards. Those 6 multi-million dollar investments across the state were awarded, and they are going incredibly well in their first year and a half. And probably our biggest internal accomplishment is we moved completely to an online grant application system. That, and I'll speak again to it later when we talk about some of our measures, reduced our paper from 9 million sheets of paper in a biennium to 2. Million sheets of paper a biennium. So a credible reduction when we shift to an online grant system, and we've had really good feedback from our grantees as well. Finally, and we'll come to this in a moment, we adopted an approach that we call measuring our mission that ties both our internal and external measures, and we'll get into that in more detail shortly. In terms of containing costs and improving services, very effectively, I believe, use a cross-agency approach in order to implement our programs, which greatly increases our effectiveness. Again, I mentioned our board structure earlier, but we have a board that is set up at its core to be designed to make sure that we are implementing work on behalf of all of the agencies that care about healthy watersheds in the state, both state and federal. We are the voluntary funding that supports voluntary local restoration, which again means that we don't have to have the staff on board in order to implement those projects. We have a grant review team structure that uses other agencies. Because we are implementing their priorities, they are very willing to sit on our teams and help make sure that we are investing in the best grants that we can. We engage with other agencies both in our planning, our strategic planning, and also in planning for things like focus investments and then implementing those projects. We are working closely with the other state agencies on the Clean Water Partnership, which is focused right now on agriculture water quality, and also what we call the Conservation Effectiveness Partnership, which, leading back to Representative Power's question earlier, is one of the ways that we are using to measure effectiveness in watersheds across the state. We work with federal agencies and other state agencies. We find areas where water quality data exists and where we have done voluntary local work, either state or federal agencies, and track over time whether we are seeing greater improvements in water quality or reductions in water temperature than we would be seeing without those measures. And we'll speak a little bit more about that at the end. And then we also are one of, I think, the early implementers and fully embrace the idea of shared services. So our human resources, for example, is provided by the Water Resources Department. Department of State Lands provides our internet services. Our payment services go through Water Resources. And we are now partnered with Department of Land Conservation and Development and Housing as well on human resources. So we realize with the size of our agency, those resources aren't best housed within our agency. They are best housed with our partners, and then we pay for those services. For our internal efficiencies, our staff is leading an approach to ensure that we have high-performance service that is human-centered and that it is adaptive. We have a couple examples of that. Again, our reorganization in 2015, we restructured the agency to put similar functions together. We encourage cross-section coordination and collaboration, and we put the staff in the driver's seat of setting up that reorganization so that they could tell us how they would be most effective. We also launched our online applications and, again, have reduced from 9.4 million sheets of paper to 2 sheets of paper. The joke used to be at OWEB that we would save watersheds but kill trees. We're killing fewer now. We also deliver grants on behalf of other agencies. So not only do we use other agencies where it is more efficient to do so, other agencies use us where it is more efficient to do so. We operate on behalf of the Department of Agriculture, the Soil and Water Conservation District grants, the Weed Grant Program runs through our agency, and the Strategic Implementation Areas Initiative that I mentioned before. We run the Forest Health Collaborative grants on behalf of the Oregon Department of Forestry. We run the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program and associated technical assistance for U.S. Department of Agriculture. We implement the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery funding on behalf of NOAA Fisheries. We are the state recipient for that funding. We are the state applicant for coastal wetlands grants for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and then we turn those around to local grantees to implement the projects on the ground. And then we have grants and reporting to complement the Oregon Coastal Management Program through the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We've again found with the work of our staff that we are incredibly efficient at moving grants out the door and making sure that they are accountable. And so it really has been helpful for us to be able to work with our sister agencies to implement those programs on their behalf. So one of the things that we've learned over time is that high-performing partnerships, local groups that come together to achieve outcomes, who actually have a plan in place, a strategic plan in place for what they want to do over time, who are focused on targeted ecological outcomes, that's the place where we can really effectively achieve landscape scale results. There are many projects we are doing across the state that are incredibly effective and important for those communities, but there are places where we need to step up the game and provide an additional level of investment. And when we do that with this recipe, we've found our work to be incredibly effective with local partners. So I had briefly mentioned before, we have 6 partnership grants on the ground, the Deschutes, the Willamette, Harney Basin around the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, sage grouse associated with the goal of keeping sage grouse from being listed in the state, projects down in Ashland around the keeping the watershed healthy and fire resistant above the city of Ashland, and then in the Upper Grand Ronde. In total, the request for us is $43 million over let's see, $43 million, and the leverage is $87 million coming from other funding sources for those programs. They are achieving, each of them is working towards different outcomes, and so one of the things that we've been doing is working with Bonneville Environmental Foundation to develop a system that even if you're working to achieve a different outcome, we can measure that in a similar fashion. We can see what a six-year investment does when somebody is working on a 50-year initiative. And whether it's Ashland and its forest or it's the Grand Ronde and fish, we can really have a common methodology for how we talk about how our investments are working towards those 50-year accomplishments. Our native fish partnership position is associated with some of these grants. Because we believe strongly in that recipe I mentioned before, we also believe it isn't fair to just invest in those partnerships that have already achieved a high-performing partnership and an action plan. We think we need to raise all boats. And so we are investing in what we call capacity-building focused investment partnerships that helps people move to that level of having a really strong partnership and putting together a strategic action plan. And that doesn't just help for OWEB funding. We've seen it bring in funds from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, from other state and federal agencies who say, yep, there's a plan I can invest in. I now understand what I'm going for. I know where my money is going to work. I know that I'm catalyzing other funds. And so we have 8 capacity building investments right now. We are soliciting for more. Many of our capacity building investments are along the coast. Our goal is to delist Coast Coho. It was the goal of our agency when it was originally formed. We're not there yet, but I think we're getting closer. And then we have 3 additional investments on the coast that we are calling Coast Coho business plans with that same thought in mind that if we can help partners basically build the bucket of a long-term action plan and a high-performing partnership that we can bring investments beyond OWEB into these areas. So our policy option packages, our program continuity package is where those 4 positions I mentioned earlier are located. There is a slight error on the slide. We are requesting continuation of 4 positions. All are limited duration. It says 2 permanent, 2 limited. They're all limited duration. 2 are focused around outcomes, and then the other 2 are focused around our granting programs that I just mentioned in the last 2 slides. The Forest Collaborative support, there is a piece of staff support to help implement the Forest Collaborative grant program on behalf of the Oregon Department of Forestry. So we receive those funds from Department of Forestry. We need a small staff resource in order to then turn around and reinvest those in grants. Our package 200 is our grant funds, and then the 215 is the grant funds associated with Forest Collaboratives. We have come once already with a request to submit a federal grant associated with some work around tide gates along the coast. We also will be coming back later in the session if they move forward for a 2 funding requests through the Coastal Wetlands grants, requests again to apply for grant funding. At this point in time, we don't see a need to increase our federal funds limitation, but we will be working with the LFO staff if that becomes the case and would be coming back to request for increased federal funds limitation. So this is just a chart that shows you the funding over time as a part of our agency changes and identifies our caseloads compared to our granting. So if you look at the line across the top, that is the projects that we have had over time. The bars on the bottom are the grant funding that's available. You see a large jump between 2011-13 and 13-15. That is when we worked with the Legislative Fiscal Office to move our federal funds to become grant funds. So there isn't really that big of an increase in the money coming in. We just moved that from the operating side to the grant fund. So were those bars to exist before, it would have been a fairly similar number. What you see is that our caseload increased early, and when we had an increase in funding in 2007, 2009, over time, it's been a slight increase since then, even though our funding is expected to increase more. And that is because our projects are becoming just a lot more complex. So where before we were replacing a culvert, we are now working on a $7 million tide gate replacement 1,700-acre estuary project down in the Coquille Valley. We are looking to provide fish passage in the future at Opal Springs, which is the second highest priority for fish passage in the state behind the Snake River dams. So we are just at a very different size and scale than we were with the agency's inception. When I see projects highlighted in other states, when I read news articles, that they have a front page article talking about a culvert replacement, and I think, yeah, we do that every day here. Uh-huh. We're on to the big stuff now. So we don't see the numbers of grants getting incredibly larger, but we do see them getting more complex. We have just one piece of legislation that impacts us directly. It made a couple of minor changes. Many of you were on the House Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee that saw this bill, adding U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as a non-voting member. We didn't think that 17 members was enough on a board. We thought we'd add one more. So changing some liability coverage for our grantees, providing them funding to better cover the liability needs that they have now, and then cleaning up some basic statutory requirements. That bill, there's an update since we posted this. The bill is actually through the Senate and is at the governor's desk for signature. So quickly, how our budget impacts our strategic plan goals. Again, as I said, we're updating our strategic plan, but there are some places that our budget directly impacts our strategic plan. First is in terms of our adaptive investment. Our budget proposal talks about coordinating monitoring of outcomes with our outcomes positions, grant offerings for strategic implementation areas, for doing restoration at scale. Those positions are directly then tied back to this goal of adaptive investment, both in monitoring our outcomes and in implementing new and innovative projects on the ground. Our local infrastructure development, forest health collaboratives have become a new key part of local infrastructure. So the funding that we would be moving from Department of Forestry to our agency supports that piece of local collaboration around federal forest health. Partnership development, again, we have a staff position that is associated with our focus investments to help expand our partnership development. And then for efficient and accountable administration, that is our core mission as a granting agency. And so all of our staff are tied in, and as well as our long-term investment strategy. So we are going to shift now and open up a little bit different presentation for you, because we want to get more into what Representative Power raised earlier about how do we actually monitor and how do our KPMs tie into this bigger conversation. So I'm going to jump really quickly here. We'd like to just spend a little bit of time talking to you about how we do measure our mission, both internally and externally. So we have started over the last year talking about that piece of measuring our mission. Again, our mission is in the middle there, and we see two parts to how we measure. The first is measuring mission progress, which is what are we doing internally to make sure that we are effective and accountable in what we deliver on the ground. The second piece then is, okay, we got the grants out there. What did they do? What is the impact of the investments that we make? And is that impact driving toward our agency mission? So I'll talk a little bit on the first piece and then turn it to Renee to talk about the measuring mission impact. So what we show here, the top raindrop is what goes in. It's the input. Down below then is what actually comes out at the end of the day if we put the right inputs in. So again, for our internal measure on impact, our inputs are our technological efficiencies. They are the training that we provide, the streamlining that we've talked about, and then our work around continuous improvement. Our expectations then are in what we measure as the outputs and outcomes. So our customer service, which is a KPM for you, should be reflected in how those inputs are working. the percent of funding for operations. Are we being as efficient as we can? That our grant payment efficiency and our grant agreement efficiency. So those are the KPMs that we believe ought to be good measures for you all of the inputs that we provide in terms of our staffing. But that isn't the only thing that we're measuring. Our KPMs aren't the only piece. In addition, we talk with the Sustainability Board about our paper cost reductions. We internally count the number of times we're touching an application, especially when it was hard copy. It was bouncing from one person's desk to another, back to the first person, up to a third person, and then back to the first person. How are we doing to reduce those numbers, the number of times that we're touching an application? The percent of applications that are complete when submitted. You would think that's not about us, but it absolutely is. If we are not effective in working with our grantees, they are not going to submit good grants to us. So how well are we training our grantees in those processes so that we are getting the best applications we can? And then how quickly do we process our payments? In addition, working with our review teams, we want to make sure their time's efficient as well. So how much time are they spending reviewing applications? Are our summaries consistent? Are we delivering to them and to our board what is needed to make the best decisions that they can?
So now we'll jump over to measuring mission impact. For the record, Renee Davis, Deputy Director. So as Maida mentioned, we have a number of internal measures. We, though, really do want to know about what are the results that emerge from those grants that we fund. And we fund a number of different grant types. You'll see in that top teardrop those inputs, restoration grants, technical assistance, outreach, et cetera. We have a number of different tools that we use to really understand better the impact of those grants. Technological malfunction, user error, I'm sure. So KPMs are one way. We talked through a number of KPMs that really are focused on ecological factors and whether those be miles of salmon habitat made available or acres of upland habitat that are improved. So we definitely have measures that focus on the ecological in the KPMs. We also do now have some community and economic measures. So we talked about a few of those earlier, the distribution of our funds across the state, where are our funds being invested across different Oregon communities, and then how are we doing in supporting effective organizations in the form of watershed councils around the state. We have, though, funded studies in the past that really look very specifically at the economic benefits or impacts of our grant investments and have found through those studies that for every $1 million of OEB funding that is provided to local organizations and communities, we expect anywhere from 15 to 24 jobs to be created. So that really does help to give a sense of the economic benefits and numbers associated with those grant investments. Go ahead. KPMs, though, are not the only approach that we use for measurement, as Representative Power mentioned. So we have a number of other tools. One example is status and trends monitoring. So this is conducted with monitoring grants that we help to support local organizations going out on the ground and measuring the status of a number of different parameters. That could be different water quality facets, whether you're talking about temperature or sediment or flow. Also looking at things like where are fish spawning. And we need that collection of information to understand what is the status of Oregon's native fish and wildlife, their habitats and water quality, and then what are the trends that we're seeing in those. Those trends hopefully will be positively influenced by restoration work on the ground, but without that basic monitoring that we help to support through our monitoring grants, we do have some unknowns. We also do have a number of tools that we use to track accomplishments and report out on those. So one example is the Oregon Watershed Restoration Inventory tracks very specific restoration metrics about those grants that we fund and also other voluntary restoration work. We have extensive reporting requirements associated with the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds. Those are salmon-focused metrics, but again, really having the ability to capture what are we getting out of those grant investments by way of either fish benefits or fish habitat benefits. And then we also, as Maida mentioned briefly, have a new process that we're putting in place to track and report out on those accomplishments associated with the focused investment partnerships. Those are longer term, much bigger dollar investments than we historically have made and want to be able to know that our board has the ability to understand what are we buying with those larger investments and how is it starting to move us towards those ecological outcomes that we were aiming for. We do support project-level monitoring, so that could be as basic as implementation monitoring that really looks at, did a grant comply with the restoration design that was intended, and is it adhering to commonly accepted restoration practices? We also do support project-level monitoring on more innovative types of restoration actions. So, for example, a recent project in the Southern Willamette Valley was looking at some innovative ways to restore wet prairies and vernal pool habitat. We really want to make sure that with some of those newer restoration techniques, we're tracking those, learning what worked, what didn't work from the restoration actions, and then incorporating that into the design of future projects. And then we do have a collection of effectiveness monitoring that we focus on. So this really takes an individual restoration action type. So, for example, riparian restoration or juniper removal projects, and looks more broadly at a whole host of these project types within the particular restoration action. What are the cumulative effects that we're seeing from that action in a particular geography and over time? So we use that information to adaptively manage our future investments. So one example of that from the riparian effectiveness monitoring work is we found that it's one thing to come and invest upfront in the project as it's initially designed. Without some ongoing stewardship funding, though, for those riparian restoration projects, we were seeing lower success. So we made some adjustments with our grant making and made it possible for grantees to come in with requests for longer-term stewardship projects that gave those plantings the ability to get to a free-to-grow stage and saw much more successful on-the-ground projects that were paying good ecological dividends over time.
Representative Power.
So when you're engaged in effectiveness monitoring for programs that are funded through federal grants, does the federal grant provide that money to your agency to do the fund to do the effectiveness monitoring follow-up, or is that something that the state funds?
Co-Chair Witt, Representative Powers. So the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund dollars allows up to 10% of funding for monitoring. So that can be monitoring that's directly associated with some of those federal, those restoration investments that are supported by federal funds. We also, though, do use an extensive amount of that funding to support Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. So their biologists can be out there doing fish counts, can be doing habitat surveys that really do match up nicely with tracking the restoration work that the federal funds are helping to support on the ground.
And what about the CREP program?
The Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. So we actually just wrapped up effectiveness monitoring on that, released the report last month. We actually, as a state, supported funding for that, knowing, though, that it's an extensive partnership with the federal agencies, primarily Farm Services Agency, to support the on-the-ground restoration. But we did support, as a state, the effectiveness monitoring on that.
And just so that you can hopefully better plan your presentation. We have about 10 minutes left.
We're good. Thank you, Representative Witt.
You're welcome.
So ultimately, what we're trying to achieve with this is this set of outcomes and impact on the ground, as well as many others. But the question is, you know, in order to do that, we have to measure a number of things. We have to measure what our inputs are, our outputs, our outcomes, and our impact. Many people want to just move to impact. There's a lot that goes in between, and those are the things that we're working to measure as a part of this process.
For the record, Renee Davis, Deputy Director. I will move us very quickly through the final slides. So you'll see here on this slide a summary of many of those restoration outputs that we've been able to achieve through time. So with over 8,000 grants in the last decade and a half plus, we've restored nearly 5,000 miles of streams, improved the condition of more than a million upland acres. There are those economic benefits that we talked about earlier in terms of job creation and also funding staying within communities. We are, though, really interested in understanding what are those changes in the natural systems that we're starting to see, not just acres and miles, but how are we seeing benefits to fish habitat in a way that's meaningful. So thanks to Co-Chair Witt for the suggestion of a couple examples to throw in here around the state to give you a sense of how we're starting to see some of those outcomes emerge. So we'll start in Wychoose Creek, which is in the Upper Deschutes Basin near Sisters. So we've had quite a significant investment in Wychoose Creek, supporting the work of a number of partner organizations. A big effort has been put into place to improve irrigation efficiency and protect those water savings in stream. You'll see in this schematic the discharge in the upper left, the stream flow is showing a fairly significant increase. This is in a creek that from the 60s to the mid-90s would run dry two of every 3 years. So this is a very significant increase in stream flow. We also are seeing decreases in water temperature. You see in the upper right figure about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit cooler water temperatures. That's supporting cold water bug communities. You ask, why do we care about that? Because those are exactly the bug communities that reintroduce salmon, Chinook salmon, and steelhead need to thrive and survive as they are reintroduced into the Upper Deschutes Basin. So really starting to see improvements in the system.
Tremendous. Representative Lewis.
Just a quick question on the previous slide, talking about 15 to 24 jobs per $1 million invested. Are those jobs for the life of a grant, or are those long-term?
Co-Chair Witt, Representative Lewis, it varies. We had a similar question actually last session, and some are temporary jobs that may be shorter term in nature than even the length of the project. Others are longer term through the duration of a single project, and others beyond. Those tend to be the more technically sophisticated projects that might emerge, whereas others are more labor-intensive projects, maybe clearing invasive species. So it does vary.
Follow up.
Please.
Do you have any idea of what percentage are long-term jobs?
Co-Chair Witt, Representative Lewis, I'm not able to answer that right now, but certainly we can follow up with you to give you some details from the University of Oregon study.
Thank you.
Okay, so we will hit on just one more example. We're going to go to 15 Mile Creek in Wasco County. This creek supports salmon and steelhead populations. Due to traditional agricultural practices in the mid-last century, there was severe erosion in this particular area. The story Maida and I discuss is driving through the gorge and not being able to see because of some of the blowing dust and wind. There has been a significant collection of partnerships that have been brought to bear to really improve some of those challenges associated with erosion, some really innovative changes to agricultural practices to use things like no-till and direct seeding. We have about 96% now of the agricultural lands in the 15 Mile Creek watershed that now use these conservation tillage practices. In addition, significant investment through programs like CREP that Representative Power mentioned and others to improve riparian buffers in the 15 Mile Creek watershed. So you see in the photos the drastic difference in the riparian shade and cover that's provided because of some of this voluntary restoration work. Because of the collective efforts of many partners and many landowners in this basin, we've seen a dramatic reduction in the number or percentage of fine sediments in 15 Mile Creek, which helps not only fish but other aquatic life. So just a few examples of how we're seeing some of these restoration benefits play through the system in a way that hopefully is good for fish, wildlife, and people. And with that, turn it over to Maida.
So we'd be glad to answer any questions that you have. I know Kathy has her follow-up presentation as well.
Yes. Thank you very much for that wonderful presentation and for the examples that you gave that made real for us some of the projects that you've undertaken. I think I'm going to try and squeeze Kathy in before we take any questions, and then hopefully we can squeeze it all in here today.
Okay. Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, members of the committee, I'm Kathy Conley with Chief Financial Office, here to give you a brief overview of the agency's governor's budget. This agency, of course, falls squarely within the governor's budget priority to have clean air and water. The agency has discussed its emerging issues, which it's pretty successful at linking with local agencies. I would echo the challenge of using other agencies for technical expertise. It helps this agency. It does put some increased workload on other agencies, but it probably is one of the most successful symbiotic kind of relationships within the natural resource program area at both the state and federal levels. This is their expenditures. Agency has no general fund. It is lottery funded, other funded, and federal funds. The grants are about $65.3 million is what we're projecting for the next biennium. Federal grants are about $39.3 million. And then the balance is, of course, their operational costs. This really shows most dramatically how effective this agency is at moving payments out the door. 92% of its budget involves special payments. Only the balance, so 8% or so, is the operations of the agency. I did want to note, actually, on this one, this doesn't reflect, this agency is the pivot point for the Measure 76 lottery funds, and so it sends out the lottery funds to the other agencies who receive lottery funds, and those are done by revenue transfers, not expenditures, at least in the governor's budget. This is their revenue history, which the agency's already discussed with you, both the challenges and the divisions. It's kind of a unique division of use between the lottery funds, is 35-65. I did want to note in the 17-19 governor's budget, there will be slightly less revenue because the Joint Ways and Means Committee has already, you recall the grant to the, not grant, but the appropriation to the Department of Agriculture for the brown apple moth.
Yes.
So that was in this, that was a use of this biennium's lottery funds, and so there will be a smaller beginning balance for the 17-19 biennium. The investments, the agency's already done a good job of discussing with you. I would just note that this agency, because of grants, is pretty careful about doing carry forward in their budget, so you can tell what are new grants and what are carry forward grants. We did the usual statewide adjustments. The governor does support the requested KPMs in this agency's budget, and of course we supported the bill that the agency had. And with that, I am done, unless there are any other questions.
Thank you very much, all three of you. And with that, subcommittee members, it is your turn. Anyone?
I'm fine.
Co-Chair Frederick, everyone's fine? Representative Helm.
I'm sorry if I missed this, because I could have. Is there some estimate of how many other dollars are leveraged by having OWEB dollars be part of a project? Because I imagine many of these projects are aggregating as funds from many different sources in order to get the project done. Is there an average per project estimate of leveraged funds?
Co-Chair Witt, Representative Helm, we actually do currently have a key performance measure about that. The target is 150% leverage. We require only a 25% match, but our grantees through time have been quite effective. We are proposing a minor adjustment to that KPM to ensure we're using the most accurate information from our grantees as is possible, but we have seen historically far beyond a one-to-one match, which comparing to other similar entities as ourselves that do this type of natural resources work has been high and quite an impressive number.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Just a commentary that I remember a good number of years ago. I know you mentioned that you're undergoing strategic planning, and I remember a very early strategic planning meeting where I and a number of other people were camped out on Mount Hood in our tents, and And we were undertaking in part the notion that watershed enhancement meant ridgetop to ridgetop and how critically important the entire watershed was. So we had worked very diligently all day long, and then it became time to have adult beverages. And at about 7,000 feet, it got cold and very windy, and we all went into our tents and burrowed in our sleeping bags. But of fond memories anyway. So, well, thank you for a wonderful presentation, as I said earlier. Last chance, subcommittee members. I'm not seeing anything. I'm going to close the public hearing then on House Bill 5040. Is there anything for the good of the order? We stand adjourned. Thank you very, very much for your presentation. Very much for your presentation. Adjourned. Thank you very, very